Is your appetite sometimes out of control? Are you unable to stop eating even when you're full? Download our new Intelligent Medicine video, Defensive Eating, Taming Your Addiction to Food. There's a physiological basis for food addiction. The food industry has gripped our brains using powerful food science. Find out what we can do about it. Go to drhoffman.com to download this important video. We will arm you with proven strategies to change your eating behavior forever. Go to drhoffman.com.
Hi, this is Layla Mutin. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Layla Weighs In on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I've got some of your questions today, so I thank you for sending me your questions. And for those of you who have questions to ask me on this podcast, please email to radioprogram@AOL.com. So, this question comes from Angela. Through losing a few pounds and some dietary changes because of an ulcer, my cholesterol went from 310 to 218 last year. Bravo, Angela. But, she says, my triglycerides are still 164 and my HDL went from a 68 to a 39. Oh no, we want HDL to stay up or go a little higher. We don't want it to come down. And her triglycerides didn't change. Angela says, I have no interest in going on statins. I've been taking tocotrienols, plant sterols. I'm taking CoQ10 and B-complex. And what do you think? Do you think krill oil is superior to fish oil for this purpose? No, I don't. I think fish oil is just fine. And Angela says she's also added some aged garlic. Good for you. Aged garlic in chiolic is very, very good. Angela says, I'm going for another test soon, so I'll have a better idea of what I've been taking. Okay, a few thoughts here. You've lost a few pounds, which is always great if you were a little overweight or something, okay? And you've made some dietary changes because of an ulcer. Now, hopefully your ulcer is feeling better. Hopefully it's going away. I hope you're following up with your doctor or your gastroenterologist, get an endoscopy, see what else is going on there, and make sure that ulcer clears up. And typically, an ulcer diet is the removal, the elimination of a lot of acidic foods and spicy foods, citrus, chocolate. It's kind of similar to being on a GERD diet. Those with acid reflux know full well that coffees, teas, chocolate, tomato products, raw onions, raw garlic, some certain fruits like bananas, maybe peaches, can cause GERD. So the removal of some of these foods, as well as spicy foods, can help with an ulcer. I'm also guessing, Angela, that to relieve any kind of ulcer discomfort, you went on a kind of bland diet. And oftentimes on a bland diet, we're having things like crackers or saltines or breads, white rice, things of that nature. That's something that will keep your triglycerides at 164. Let's talk about your triglycerides first. I'm going to go through all of your lipid profile. Having high triglycerides is an independent risk factor for heart disease, I believe, much more so than cholesterol. When we have high triglycerides, the triglycerides are also the fat in our body, whether it's intramuscular, intra-organ, or underneath the skin, subcutaneous fat. But high triglycerides in the blood, you know, that's when your blood resembles or has the consistency of a milkshake if your triglycerides are very high. Angela's triglycerides are not very high. They're at 164, and she hasn't been able to get them down. But those triglycerides will come down if you remove a lot of the starchier carbohydrates that you're eating. Those triglycerides would then fall off a cliff, literally. Now, we like to see triglyceride levels under 100, but we even like to see them under 80, which is optimal. Now, when you make the change in your diet, don't go running back to your doctor for a blood test a month later to see if there's been any change in your lipid profile. It takes a full 3 months for this to occur. So give the diet time to do its work. triglycerides will come down, and quite quickly, when you embark on a lower-carb yet blandish ulcer diet. Now, the other part of your lipid profile, your HDL used to be a 68. That's a nice high number. And it dropped down to 39. Having a low HDL, as many of you know, is an independent risk factor for cardiovascular disease. Because what is HDL? The high-density lipoprotein, that is HDL, is the garbage truck that removes a lot of the more harmful cholesterol and lipids out of the body. So we want a good high HDL. We also want the right particle. So I'm thinking that since you went on an ulcer diet, which is blander, less in, you know, fatty foods and all of that, your HDL went from a 68 to a 39. You unwittingly, maybe wittingly, went on a low-fat diet. And maybe you did that to lose a few pounds. That's okay. But you know how we keep HDL high? You know how we keep it raised to where we want it to be, which is over 50 for women and over 40 for men? Two ways, in this order of importance. Eat more fat. And when I say eat more fat, I'm not talking about deep-fried junk. I'm not talking about French fries. I'm not talking about deep-fried anything, whether it's chicken wings or calamari or anything like that. I'm talking about eat more fat like your good quality grass-fed butter, your olive oil, the fats in your nuts and your seeds, in your avocado, in your nice fatty salmon, in a good grass-fed steak, in some good organic poultry. I'm talking about naturally occurring fats, not vegetable oil, right? That's one way to keep HDL up. The other way to keep your HDL up is exercise. Whether it's aerobic exercise, you know, cardio, or whether you're doing weights or a combination of both, which is really the best prescription for exercise, that's a way to bring your HDL back up. So, Angela, check your diet. Maybe you've gone too low in fat. You want to bring that back up. Get some good, nice organic nuts and seeds and a really good quality olive oil and eat some salmon and eat some grass-fed beef and get some good quality grass-fed pastured butter into your diet, and that HDL should creep up. Again, it takes a few months for this to occur. Your total cholesterol going from 310 to 218 is great. So overall, that number is very good. Now, I, as anybody's nutritionist, I don't want anyone going on a statin except when absolutely medically necessary. And that's usually amongst people who have had a heart attack or have very, very high cholesterol, or they've been shown on an EBT heart scan to have plaque that's forming in their coronary arteries. These may be reasons to go on statins. But other things you could do, and Angela's already doing that, you're taking plant sterols, you're taking tocotrienols. These are important antioxidants to keep any LDL from oxidizing, which would be a cause of plaque formation in coronary arteries. CoQ10, absolutely. Take your fish oil. That fish oil will also help you with those triglyceride levels to really optimize them. Aged garlic is always a good idea. I like panethene also, and I like bergamot, as in the supplement cholestapure. Bergamot, oil of bergamot, you know, it's that essence found in Earl Grey tea for you tea aficionados. Earl Grey tea has that beautiful, wonderful scent that's the oil of bergamot. Well, bergamot has been found to help lower high cholesterol levels. Okay, so Angela, thank you for your question and best of luck. You know, take into consideration everything I said and don't go back to your doctor for a solid 2.5 to 3 months to see if anything has changed. All right. We've got another question from Doris. And Doris says, love the new Layla podcast. Thank you, Doris, and I thank you for your question. Dr. Hoffman recommended Spectrum Naturals mayonnaise, but all I could find was Spectrum Naturals made with canola oil. I heard you both say negative things about canola oil. Have you changed your mind about that? Thanks so much for the great work. Doris, thank you very much for your kind words, and thanks for the question. No, my mind has not changed about canola oil. Yes, it's a better oil than other vegetable oils such as corn oil or safflower or sunflower oil because It will have a little less omega-6 and a little more omega-3. But it's not going to come anywhere near, say, flax oil. Now, if you're not finding the Spectrum Naturals mayonnaise made with flax or made with olive oil, you may have to visit your local health food store. Worst comes to worst, you may have to find it online. I know that where I live, I find it in my local Associated Market and in my local Key Food. They've got the Spectrum Naturals made with flaxseed oil. I also find that at my local health food store, which is not a chain of any kind or anything. So good luck in finding Spectrum Naturals. Thank you for your question, Doris. Okay, the next thing I want to talk to you about, because the holidays are upon us, or we've been entrenched in them, 10 common food safety mistakes. I just want to give you a primer. I want to remind all of you cooks, all of you chefs in the kitchen, all of you cooking for your families, all of you taking care of all the holidays this season and responsible for so much cooking, and it could get very, very overwhelming. And I just want to remind you that it's more than, you know, throwing away your expired milk or washing your fruits and vegetables. You always want to wash your fruits and vegetables. There are other things that you want to be careful of because there can be consequences. And here are the 10 most common food safety mistakes. And this is at the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics website. I find this very, very useful information. Mistake number one is tasting your food to see if it's still good. You know, you never want to taste your food to check if it is spoiled. You can't taste, see, or even smell the bacteria that causes food poisoning. And tasting just a little contaminated food can cause serious illness. So be sure to throw away anything that's expired before more harmful bacteria grows. Number two, first of all, let me just expound on that a little bit. Let me elaborate on that a little bit. Basically, any cooked food or any food you're bringing home from the market that you've cooked, say you bring home a chicken that you're cooking for Sunday dinner, any remnant of that chicken that's still left over by Wednesday or so, Wednesday night, should really go in the trash. 3 days is the rule on leftovers. Okay, you don't cook something and think that it lasts a week in your refrigerator. I actually had a patient call me. This was about a year and a half ago. She was vomiting. She said, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what happened. And of course, I asked her, well, what did you eat? What did you have? What happened? She said, well, I ate a burger. I said, well, where'd you get the burger? Was it at a local diner? Did you go fast food? Oh, no, this is a burger I made a week ago. I had it in the fridge. So she cooked it a week ago. She had it in the fridge. Well, guess what? It doesn't last 6 or 7 days. 3 days is the limit. Just because you've got the temperature at about 40, 39, 38 degrees in your refrigerator does not inhibit all bacteria from growing. It simply slows down the process. Now, if you cook that burger or that chicken and you put it in the freezer, that could last a good 6 to 8 weeks. But in the fridge, no, not at all. So, on to mistake number two, putting cooked or ready-to-eat foods back on a plate that held raw meat. I've seen people do this, especially around the grill. You never want to let raw meat, seafood, or poultry touch cooked meat or any ready-to-eat foods because this will cause cross-contamination. The foodborne pathogens from the raw meat can easily spread onto ready-to-eat foods and cause food poisoning. All right. So make sure that you're always separating. You're using separate plates, separate cutting boards, and separate utensils to keep the raw separate, pardon me, from ready to eat foods. Let me take a sip of water. Okay. Mistake number three. And I know many people are guilty of this, and I was too before I learned any better. Mistake number three is thawing food on the counter. You never want to thaw food on the counter. Harmful foodborne pathogens multiply rapidly when foods are in the danger zone between 40 and 140 degrees Fahrenheit. Instead, you always want to thaw your foods in the refrigerator, in a bowl of cold water or a pot of cold water or a sink full of cold water or in the microwave. Okay. How many of us have come home from work? Oh, I forgot to defrost that chicken breast. I'll just take it out of the freezer and I'll leave it on the counter to thaw out for the next couple of hours. No, you don't want to do that. You want to take that and put it into a bowl or a pot of cool water and let it sit there in about 30 minutes or so time, depending on the thickness of the meat. It should be ready to cook. Or try to remind yourself the night before, hey, let me take that package of grass-fed beef out of the freezer and put it in the fridge so when I come home later, it'll be thawed and ready to cook. Mistake number four, and this may surprise many of you. I know it surprised a lot of my colleagues. Mistake number four is washing your meat or poultry. I will repeat, mistake number four is washing meat or poultry. Never wash raw meat or poultry because the water can easily spread bacteria to your sink, countertops, and other kitchen surfaces. Only wash raw fruits and vegetables. Okay? Let me explain. When you buy your organic free-range broiler fryer chicken, you take it out of its wrapping, you remove the giblets, all of that, let any juices drain out into your garbage. You put it onto your roaster pan, you season it as such, you preheat your oven, and you put it in the oven. The heat will destroy the bacteria. But by washing that chicken, I know a lot of you are nodding your heads. And really, this only came to light several years ago. But even many of my colleagues still have trouble with it because I've never not washed a chicken. I have to wash my chicken. I have to wash and dry my steak before I put it on the grill, right? What you want to do is pat the meat to dry it so that it will brown, season it accordingly, and put it into your broiler, into your oven. That's really what you want to do. We're not supposed to be washing our meat and poultry. We are, however, supposed to wash all of our produce. Mistake number five, letting food cool before putting it in the fridge. How many of you do that because you don't want your fridge temperature to come down, right? It won't come down. If you've got, you know, an up-to-date, energy-efficient refrigerator, the fridge will work a little harder for the next couple of hours in order to maintain its temperature. You don't want to leave food out of the refrigerator for more than 2 hours or 1 hour if it's over 90 degrees Fahrenheit outside. Illness-causing bacteria can grow rapidly when perishables are left in the danger zone. Instead, always refrigerate foods in a timely manner. If you're on a road trip, tailgating, or picnicking, be sure to pack perishable foods in a well-insulated cooler. Make sure you've got plenty of ice or freezer packs in there. Mistake number six. Okay, I know some of you will be guilty of this. Mistake number six is eating raw cookie dough or batter or other foods containing uncooked eggs. Never eat any raw eggs because they may contain salmonella or other harmful bacteria. Instead, cook your eggs thoroughly, avoiding foods that contain raw or undercooked eggs. Well, what about you chefs who love to make a Caesar salad from scratch using it's actually a coddled egg, so you can't really call it raw. Worst comes to worst, if you're somebody who loves making their own mayonnaise and you're using raw eggs, you may want to opt for pasteurized eggs. It's an option. Mistake number seven, marinating meat or seafood on the counter and then using that raw meat marinade on cooked food. That's a big no-no, and I see this a lot at barbecues. You know, the guy's cooking on the grill and they're using that marinade after taking the raw meat out, but what you really need to do is boil up that marinade. You never want to marinate meat, poultry, or seafood on the counter or use the same marinade for raw meat and cooked food. If you marinate on the counter, harmful germs can multiply rapidly. And in addition, if you use the same marinade on raw and cooked meats, this harmful bacteria from the raw food can spread to the cooked food. You always marinate your raw meat, seafood, poultry in the fridge and only reuse the marinade if you bring it to a boil just before using. So for those of you who are out there on the grill, pulling your marinated meat along with the bowl right next to you on the grill and you continue marinate it all while it's cooking? Wrong. You don't want to do that. You want to take the raw meat out of the marinade, put it on the grill, go back inside, pour that marinade into a saucepan and bring it up to a boil. And then once it's boiled for at least a couple of minutes, then you could bring it back outside and use that marinade on your cooked meat. That's how you do it. Mistake number 8, undercooking meat, poultry, seafood, or eggs. Cooked food is safe only after it's been heated to a high enough temperature, internal temperature, to kill harmful bacteria. So you always want to use a food thermometer. And I know a lot of good cooks and chefs are always using a food thermometer. Always a very, very good idea. You want to always check the doneness of red meat, pork, or poultry. And that's the way to make sure to keep yourself safe. Number 9, this is pretty obvious to most of you, not washing your hands. Illness-causing bacteria can survive in many places, including on your hands. Washing your hands obviously will stop the spread of bacteria. Did you know we're in cold and flu season now? You could reduce your risk of catching the flu by 50% if you're a good hand washer. So, shockingly enough, according to eatright.org, only 40% of those surveyed wash their hands with soap and warm water for at least 20 seconds all of the time. You need to wash your hands for 20 seconds, and that's the amount of time it takes you to sing Happy Birthday. Remember that? So always wash your hands for at least 20 seconds with soap and warm running water. And number 10, I know many of us are guilty of this, not replacing sponges and dish rags. Ironically, sponges, dish rags, and items used to clean are some of the most dirtiest tools in your kitchen, says eatright.org. Sponges and dish rags can hold on to harmful foodborne pathogens and cause serious health risk. You always want to sanitize your sponges at least every other day. Sanitize your sponge at least every other day and replace them every week or two for best protection against germs. Okay, you want to sanitize your sponge, make sure it's a little wet, pop it in your microwave, microwave it for, a minute or two maybe. It should be quite hot, so be careful removing that, all right? Pour boiling water on it. That's another way you can help to almost sanitize your sponge. And how many of us are guilty of washing our hands properly, but then we dry our hands on that dish rag that we've been using for several days? Keep some paper towels or, if you want to be very green about it, keep a lot of clean dish rags available. Thank you for joining me in this edition of Layla Weighs In on your Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.